The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Good morning to you, Mr. Martin.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
It's always a
good
pleasure.
Good morning, Trinidad and Tobago.
It's always a pleasure to have you chatting with us here on Freedom 106.5 FM. And I want to say this morning that I am listening to the cries of the public, those learned luminaries, and the concerns they are raising about the armed officers' presence at our nation's primary and secondary schools. But before I delve into that, it will be remiss of me if I didn't ask you, as the president, how was the reopening of the school term? Was there a smooth transition? Are there secondary schools and primary schools that are not opened as yet? Are you aware of any? What was the general status yesterday with students returning to schools?
Thank you for the opportunity to address that situation. And TUTOR congratulates the Ministry of Education and by extension the Honorable Minister of Education. The feedback we have gotten is that quite a number of schools have had repairs done during the July-August vacation, much more than in the immediate past. We don't like to compare, but this year was much better. Actually, the majority of schools that needed the repairs got repairs. Some are not fully complete, but they do not threaten reopening. The majority of schools did reopen yesterday. One school that we're aware of information coming to us is Cedros Secondary School. The repairs were not complete, and we understand from reports. We will be visiting today, both Mr. Brooms, our industrial relations officer, and myself, will be visiting the Cedros Secondary School. We understand that when they started work on the school in the ceiling, they saw evidence of the presence of bats, and that would have caused some concerns to the contractors as well as to the Ministry of Education. So that school did not reopen yesterday from our information. And Toko Secondary, they had to close early because of some electrical issues. And we were informed that the school will remain closed today to address those electrical issues. There are some other schools on our radar. There are issues that can be addressed, and I know the Ministry of Education is addressing it. But by and large, we had a smooth reopening of school yesterday, and the majority of schools would have been open. There are some issues in Tobago as well. We are getting further information on the Tobago schools, but they would have had a smooth reopening as well.
Well, all right. From what you have identified, Cedra Secondary and Toko are the only two schools so far that you have identified that did not reopen at the start of this new school term.
Toko did open.
But it closed early.
During the day, they had to...
They dismiss early.
Dismiss early because of electrical issues.
So you think that electrical issues will be sorted out for today for students to return? Was it sorted out
yesterday? We are hopeful. I believe that TNTech has to also come in and look at the
electrical infrastructure
and the entry point and the meter.
All right. So chances are they may or may not open today. And if they do, students may be turned away again, yet again, due to this. So that's an ongoing story. We will most definitely look at it.
We are told that it will be closed today.
Toko Secondary will be closed today and Cedros closed.
Yes.
They have not reopened. They have not been able to reopen.
As far as we are aware.
All right. So another thing I want to say this morning and talk to you about before we get into the crux of, well, to the main story that is looming on everybody's mind. A lot of parents are experiencing gross delays in getting their students to secondary schools, especially with transfers. All right. Some parents would have sought transfers when they got their child result and they went in for orientation. When that happened, they were told that they will get an answer on August the 18th of 2025, which is a few weeks away. So you can't buy no books, you can't really get into uniforms or anything like that, because at the end of the day, you don't know what school your child will end up because you asked for a transfer. Now, what I discovered yesterday is that with the transfer, some people come in with letters, some people get calls, some people didn't. I made a call and I found out that there's a lot of backlog. What is happening, and can you speak on it with students that are unable to go to school this morning because principals refuse to accept them because this transfer letter was not given in a timely manner?
In the past, the transfers, and I will start with primary schools, the transfers were between principal to principal.
Yes.
So the receiving principal and the principal that the school, the child originally is registered at. Excuse me. Sorry. So it was the receiving principal will indicate that they have the space for the incoming child. The transfer form would have been between both of the principals. And once approval was given, then the child with the transfer certificate goes to the new school, would get the book list, et cetera, et cetera. And that was the process. In the secondary school, it had to go to the district office. So the transfer fills out the form from their present school, takes it to the district office. So, you know, we have 8 district offices, Trinidad and Tobago, and the supervisor, school supervisor, would do the investigation and approve or not approve based on the receiving principal. It changed recently for the primary school to follow that particular procedure. In the immediate past, the Ministry of Education took it away from both the school supervisors and the principals. And there was a committee that was formed at the Ministry of Education head office, and that committee dealt with all transfers, primary, secondary. So they had to meet and they had to determine whether the child would get the transfer, the student would get the transfer. So you understand what is taking place now. We have said to the Ministry of Education, one, that is micromanaging the schools. We understand from inside persons that there were some questionable transfers. And this was the solution that the Ministry of Education had adopted in order to deal with those questionable transfers. Instead of dealing with it at the case-by-case or the level or the schools that they allegedly found questionable transfers, they took this policy, and it is punishing every transfer because it is not done in a timely manner. When you have hundreds, maybe even thousands of transfers, and this committee is not dedicated that will sit every day to determine transfers, and then yet you are taking it away from the schools who would give you the almost instantaneous answer as to yes or no. And it's contradictory to what the Ministry of Education is speaking about, school-based management, where decisions should be made at the level of the school. You are now taking it away. And this is the reason why we have this backlog of transfers. I know of a number of students, parents who are awaiting this. And it not only affects the parents and students, affect the school, the incoming school, as well as the school who's releasing the child. Because you now have to cater for either more or less. And then if the student isn't at the level or where you are at the curriculum point, then the incoming or receiving teacher has to make up in some way to bring that child to the level of his or her class. So you understand all of that impacts, and we understand fully how the parents feel. Because, I mean, yes, you are in limbo right now. The child remains in the school. Do you continue there, have, you know, whatever your uniform and so you would have bought, and then have to buy a new uniform? So we have said to the Ministry of Education that this process isn't working and there needs to be a better process in order to have transfers completed.
You know, what you just shared there, listen, is a very scary thing. It is 6:33. I just have to pause you a bit.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
We are currently chatting with the president of Trinidad and Tobago Unified Teachers Association, TUTA, and Mr. Martin Lumpkin, and we were dealing on the issue of transfers. Now, one texter is saying to me, Martin, when you have transfers done on a one-by-one basis, there's a greater propensity for inducements to guarantee transfers. You know, we have a society like the bribe. So we talk to the principal, and we hear what's going on, pal. If you could sort out this, I mean, as a parent, I being honest, I wouldn't physically pay a principal at us to get my child in, but I would offer services to the school. If all you have any functions, you know, you could call me. I will come and host. I will be there to support the child. You have in your class, whatever thing, I could help you with the events planning, the decorations, and that kind of thing. Becoming an involved parent, could that be seen as an inducement?
It can, depending on the angle you take it. Generally, we encourage parents to be involved. And if a new parent, proposed new parent, is willing to also, that benefits the school and doesn't benefit individuals, then we can see it as something being positive. But the questionable transfers that I spoke of recent, just now there, is what the Ministry of Education would have been concerned about. And we are saying, if you have concerns about particular schools, then you deal with it. And if you are not trusting of your principals, then the school supervisors can be another layer of protection, as would have been done in the past. And you are saying now you don't trust your school supervisors in the district. So are you saying that the principals and school supervisors are both in collusion to have, you know, the transfers tainted? And so you need to take it up to another level, which is causing the backlog. Hence the reason we're saying there must be a more efficient and effective way of implementing transfers. If you continue with your school supervisors being involved and you have questions about it, then there are procedures to deal with it. But don't punish the entire nation for the, you know, mishandling by a few, because it's a few.
All right. And I am very happy to hear that. So parents this morning are unable to send children to school because they would have not wanted the child to go a particular secondary school or primary school, and they would have already put in transfers. Some parents are telling me they got calls that the school of choice, or the schools, because I think when they do not transfer, it's two schools, was filled, and if you have a third option. And when parents said yes, and the third option was accepted, they told some parents to send an email quickly, like now, to this email address in your earliest convenience, saying that you will accept the third choice. So that simply means an acceptance went down. Because if you call me and you tell me A and B secondary schools are filled, but would you take M? M secondary school has room, it's closed. Would you accept this? And you say, okay, yes, I would accept it, because I don't want my child going X, so I will put it, I will accept M. And then they say, send an email to transfers@moe.gov.tt saying that you are accepting this. And you do that. And then you sit and you wait. So the parents will tell themselves, okay, school is opening. They told me to send an email saying I'm accepting it. So which means I got through, because you called me and said, this is an option. Would you take it? Parents went and buy uniforms, books, and child not accepted in the school because this letter was not arrived on time for the parent to collect and go. So some students were turned away yesterday. And that is what is happening. That is the reality of it. I visited the district in Tunapuna opposite Exodus Spaniard yesterday, and there were a lot of people there, Mr. Martin, disappointed, disenfranchised, because their children cannot go to school on day one.
Yes, and it's quite unfortunate. And, you know, I feel for those parents, because I'm a parent myself. Mm-hmm. And if I had to go through that for the welfare of my child, I would be utterly disturbed, to say the least. I'm being, you know, kind in the words as well. And some parents I know are waiting for transfers. And you know, there's a bigger question to that, mm-hmm. as to why parents want transfers from one school to another. If it is a change of residence, that's fine. But if it is other reasons, which I would not get into.
We wouldn't get into that. Yeah. School,
yes, that's unfortunate, because all schools should be what we term centers of excellence and should cater for all the children, but that's not the case. And I'm not saying that the staff is to blame. Sometimes it's resources, sometimes it's infrastructure. You know, there are various reasons. And, you know, we can take up a whole day speaking about...
Indeed so. But in some instances, parents are telling me yesterday that their child were placed in a secondary school that is 45 to 50, almost an hour away from where they live. And there are other schools within close proximity. And how my child end up there. So what was recommended in the earlier onset of the SEA results was you have to register your child at the school that was that the child was placed in. Make the application on the registration. So the child is registered. And you accept, right? The child is registered. And then you send the application through from the school. They give you a receipt form part, the part of it. And then you function from there. And before we wrap the interview this morning, as time is quickly ticking away, let's talk about, because we could really chatter, Mr. Lumpkin, when you and I talking, we just talk. Let's talk a little bit about the school presence of police officers now. Unarmed and armed police officers. I'm now hearing in the news it's for external purposes and they're not to walk in the schools, they're not there to patrol inside the school building. So, I mean, is Tutor welcoming the presence of officers? I would prefer them in the school and not outside. But what is Tutor's position on this?
Tutor has been on record as saying that we would support any initiative which will bring some semblance of normalcy to schools that are at risk with violence and indiscipline, not only within the compound, but external as well. And we made the point that schools are a reflection. Schools are a microcosm of the community. And we have said on record, and I want to be lucidly clear when I say this, that we support the initiative. However, it cannot be a long-term initiative. It must be short-term, and it must complement all the other interventions that take place. Now, within most, if not all, of the secondary schools are security guards and schools' health and safety officers, which lend to the issue of patrolling and interventions as necessary. There are deans at secondary schools. So the first instance we're calling on is to have the full complement of security officers at our nation's schools. I can point out one in particular, Chagones North Secondary, the largest secondary compound in Trinidad. During the COVID time, the complement of officers were reduced because there was the perception that they didn't need as much officers. Post-COVID, the complement will never carried to the what it should be with less officers.
Wow.
We understand about 48 positions of schools' health and safety officers have not been filled. And we are hopeful because, one, the Honorable Prime Minister spoke about veering away from contract work. So we are hoping that these officers, along with, and let me stick in very quickly, the ECCE teachers, they are on contract too, and BOAs, and there are some other officers within student support services, that they are going to be made permanent and given tenure and security of employment. Coming back to the security aspect. And so last night I spoke with a former national officer who told me that this is not a new initiative. In the 90s, early 90s, 1990, under Minister Panton, we understand two schools had officers placed, San Juan North Secondary and Malik Secondary. But they were undercover as such. It wasn't widely publicized, but their presence was there to assist the the schools at that time, because there, apparently there was an upsurge of violence and intruders. And so if we are having, and I listened to your clip, and I fully agree with most of what was said. If we are having officers and it's in the schools, if they are, and we have said we are against having armed officers for obvious reasons, if they are, it should be concealed, and because of various reasons. But we are not against having the officers, and there is to be a meeting on Thursday with stakeholders. I anticipate that a number of questions will be answered, because we have some questions as well. We are not sure, and we realize, as the Honorable Minister is saying, it's a dynamic. We could say other things about it, but us, the final document and the final policy has not been put into place. Let me just say that.
But Mr. Lumpkin, you know, students, children, persons, we see police officers all the time. And we go into the supermarket, police pull up, they might be in the supermarket buying something, they have their weapon, which is part of their uniform, on them. And it's not concealed, it's on their person. It's some of them have the arrows across their chest, others will have a side firearm. I am not expecting them to be walking through the school with AR-15 across their chest and that kind of thing, but having their firearm on them in the school compound, conducting their official police duties, how could that be traumatizing for children? We see that all the time, and it's a norm. We know police officers carry guns.
Yes, and there are students who have been exposed to these weapons before, and it would not be new to them, but there are, let's take, for example, in the school I was previously, and that's Granville RC Primary, which is in the rural area, and which would not have that sort of exposure. Now, one may argue that we do not need the presence of the police officers because of our
close-knit community,
our children, and so we don't fall into that category. But if you take some of these students, and I spoke with a retired sergeant who was a community police officer, and he said when he would have gone into schools, the children were fascinated. They came up to him and say, "Sir, I could touch the gun," and he would have to say no. So there has to be some level of also training, proper training by these officers, and sensitization by the students. We do not really need that instruction at our schools. Yes, we can deal with it in the onset, and then it will become as norm. But they also, our concern is, if you have firearms on a school compound, and a school compound is to us a very sacred place, if you have firearms and an intruder comes in with a firearm, what is the likely happenings? What could, you know, take place in terms of...
But what will happen if an intruder comes in with a firearm and the police is unarmed?
Well, there has to be some other way of disarming. We are concerned about the innocent persons being, because
traumatized.
Long time we used to say, when you're pelting stone don't have eyes. Wherever you pelt it will go. When persons are shooting bullets, don't have eyes. So wherever it is, sometimes it goes where it's not intended. So all of these things have to be carefully, we are saying that it has to be carefully looked at. At this time, we are not in favor of having armed police officers. If the armed police officers are outside, as indicated, and there may be an unarmed police officer with less lethal weapons, tasers, etc. But then, are you going to apply it to the student as well, too?
But when I look at the magnitude and the way in which these students are fighting and the violence that they are carrying out. All right, let me take a call. Hello, good morning, quickly.
This is the whole family. We lobby for firemen officers in school. This is not 1962, Mr. Lumpkin. What has happened if a bandit from the rubber there, right? And the officer has, you don't want officer. I heard you previously, you don't want firemen officers in school. This is not 1962, so let me tell you this. If a bandit coming into school, the officer have no gun.
All right, pal. Thanks. Calm down. All right. Okay. Hello, good morning. Hello.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
We have morning. A situation at a school, a prestige school in Port of Spain, where a student came with a gun some years ago. I don't know if Mr. Lum can remember that scenario. But so in a case like that, and at the time, no police officer was assigned to any school. In a case like that, how do you deal with the situation, given the fact that you had no police officers, but you had this man or this student walking in with a gun at school, or some madman walking off the street like we saw in the United States some time ago and shoot the children, you know, who were in prayers? Thank you.
All right. And we've seen, Mr. Lumpkin, in recent months in the past, where gangs have infiltrated school compounds. They have gotten this whole of students and, you know, made them active members of their gangs. So what are some of the solutions, very quickly in wrapping up, do you think needs to happen with respect to the armed officers' presence at our nation's schools?
And very quickly, because I have another interview at 7 with your sister media house. If we have it, as I said, concealed, have external officers with arms as well, but internal have non-lethal weapons, and their presence should be working, because there are other questions. But as I said, and I want persons to be explicitly clear, we are not against it.
Okay.
It has to be implemented properly, and it must not be a long-term solution. The community has to work with the schools. The other institutions, governmental, non-governmental, faith-based, community-based, we have to get to the root cause of what is taking place. Because if you listen to our citizens, it's an indictment on our society that we have reached thus far. And we need to get it back to where it was previously, and to tackle gangs head on externally. And if there are suspicions of, and it has to be clear suspicions, and it must not be just, you know, by the way, then you deal with those students as well too. And that's the start. But as others would have said, psychologists, the soft methods as well too, we need to have as well. The hard methods, yes, but he saw soft methods as well, too.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lumpkin, for chatting with me this morning. Again, it's always a pleasure to have you. All right?
Anytime. Thank you for having me.
Take care.
All the best. Mm-hmm.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.